Hare Krishna.
So we're continuing with third chapter. So there are summaries of Krishna's pastimes. And we are not supposed to actually study the 10th canto. But then one might ask himself, why is it that already in the third canto there are stories from Krishna's lotus face, right? From the 10th canto. And Prahladananda Maharaj says that it's because one might not actually come to the 10th canto. One might just drop the book before. So he gives a little, Vyasadeva gives a little preview, just to sort of keep us interested and to give us a little bit of a heads up for what's coming. And also, there are three levels of students. One is a materialistic person who sees everything through the material conception. Another one is a person who is on the path. And a third one is a person who already achieved perfection. And it is said that all three of them get benefit by studying the pastimes of the Lord. Just they see them differently, but gradually they sort of purify and achieve the highest goal. So, me personally, I definitely am in the first category. So, hopefully, through this little effort, I'll get some purification. So, please bless me that there'll be some something of value for you today. Attracted by the beauty and fortune of Rukmini, the daughter of King Bhishmaka, many great princes and kings assembled to marry her. But Lord Krishna, stepping over the other hopeful candidates, carried her away as his own share, as Garuda carried away nectar. Princess Rukmini, the daughter of King Bhishmaka, was actually as attractive as fortune itself, because she was as valuable as gold, both in color and in value. Since the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is the property of the Supreme Lord, Rukmini was actually meant for Lord Krishna. But Shishupal was selected as her bridegroom by Rukmini's elder brother, although King Bhishmaka wanted his daughter to be married to Krishna. Rukmini invited Krishna to take her away from the clutches of Shishupal. So when the bridegroom, Shishupal, came there with his party with a desire to marry Rukmini, Krishna all of a sudden swept her from the scene, stepping over the heads of all the princes there, just as Garuda carried away nectar from the hands of the demons. This incident will be clearly explained in the 10th canto. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Hare. Yeah, so this is a really deep and interesting pastime. Actually, all the exchanges with Krishna and Rukmini, between Krishna and Rukmini, they're full of nectar, full of taste. So it also, their pastimes start like so also. So we are here, the scene is in Vidarbha kingdom, in Kundinagram, where King Bhishmaka has six children, five sons and one daughter. The oldest son is Rukmi, and the daughter is Rukmini. So Rukmini was of age to be married. So Rukmi's idea was to marry her with his friend Shishupal. Now Shishupal, he's a maternal cousin of Krishna. Devaki, Krishna's mother, and Shishupal's mother, they are sisters. So Shishupal is the son of Damagosh, who is the king of Chedi kingdom. And Rukmi started to make the arrangements for the marriage. But actually, Bhishmaka and so the father and all the residents of Kundinagram, they had different opinion, different desires. They wanted Rukmini to marry Krishna. So, but because the custom was that the eldest brother makes the arrangements, they sort of were bound by this custom and they had to follow. Because Bhishmaka also was very much attracted, attached to Rukmi. So he had to sort of put a blind eye on this situation, or how to say. And Rukmini knew, okay, now things are already happening and nobody's making any arrangements for me, so I guess I have to make something myself. So she wrote a letter to Krishna. Now, how does she know about Krishna, right? Because she never seen Krishna. So the thing was that Narada Muni, he was a sage and he was traveling all over and he would visit the court often and he would discuss with King Bhishmaka about Krishna. So Rukmini, naturally, she was there present and she would hear all these discussions between the sage and the king and other sages that were present at the court. So she started to get some idea who Krishna is. And naturally, because she's an eternal consort of Krishna, she's incarnation of Lakshmi, she was very much attracted by what she was hearing. So she decided that Krishna, if she'll marry Krishna. And if in this life she'll not be able to marry Krishna, she'll just continue with her penances, her austerities, and in this way, hopefully sometime in the future, purchase Krishna. And she says that even if it's going to take tens of millions of births, she's ready to do it. So she wrote a letter. And in this letter, she explained the situation. And because she was very intelligent and she was a princess, she knew about the political matters and how difficult it would be for Krishna to snatch her away, to kidnap her, or basically to save her from the impeding situation. So she was, now this letter is very deep, and you could just study the letter for, I don't know, hours and hours, discuss the letter. I'll just mention a few things there. So she sort of addresses Krishna accordingly to the situation that is there. So, for instance, she says, Achyuta, as in, he's never failing to save, to consort his devotees. And in another stanza, she says, Ajita, as she's referring to him as unconquerable. So he would be able to defeat the opposition that might arise when he comes to take her. So Krishna, this Brahmana with the letter, he was sent and he arrived to Krishna's palace. So Krishna accepted him properly worshipped him, and then after all the formalities were done, he inquired. So the Brahmana gave him the letter, and as Krishna was reading it, his mind was like giving different arguments, and Rukmini already referred to all these arguments that are there, how he will be able to save her. One of them was because she's going to be in the inner chambers of the palace. How is Krishna going to get there without causing harm to any of her relatives? So she had a plan, because the custom was that every royal lady, before marriage, she's worshipping Durga Devi. And in the temple. So she was worshipping it every day, this deity. And also on the day of the marriage, there would be like a ceremonial final visit to the temple in the morning. So she suggested that Krishna comes there, and when she's gonna be coming to the temple or from the temple, there would be a good opportunity for Krishna to take action. So when Krishna heard the whole message, he immediately decided, okay, yes, I'm gonna go and save her, I'm gonna go get her. And he also said to the Brahmana that actually he's, because Rukmini was saying that Krishna is everything to her and she's just thinking of him and there's no one else for her because she's very qualified and Krishna is very qualified, so they belong together. And Krishna also said, yes, I also, when I heard about Rukmini and her qualities, her devotion, I've been losing sleep over it, and I want to marry her. So I'm gonna immediately take the road and try to get there in time. The marriage was just in 2 days, due to 2 days, so he had to act quickly. Now here the description is about the horses. I like that verse very much, so I sort of try to memorize it. So he instructed his chariot driver, Daruka, to mount the chariot and prepare for a long travel. So the verse is Shaibhyastu Shuka Patraba Sugrivo Hema Pingala Mega pushpastu mega ba pandurohi balahaka. So it describes Shaibya, the first verse, says Shuka Patraba. So that means the wings of the parrot. So many of you have been to Vrindavan, so you know the parrots, what color they are. They're like very bright, bright green. So this is the first verse, Shaibya. Sugriva. Hema Pingala. Hema, we know it's gold, golden color. Pingala color, it's like a orange-brown kind of. And if you mix these two together, it comes to kind of like dirty blonde hue. So like toned down blonde. So that's Sugriva. And then Mega Pushpa, it's a color of the cloud. So he's kind of like Krishna's hue. Dark, grayish, blue thing. And then Valahaka, he's Pandu. So you know Pandu, it means pale. So it's kind of like white, whitish gray, dirty white, off-white color. So these are the four horses. Then Prabhupada is saying that the travel didn't take more than 9 hours. That's like overnight. because it says that they arrived in the morning. And the distance was around 1,000 miles. So that's, these horses are something else, something different than what we have now. Because these contemporary horses, the most that they can do in one day is like 40 or 50 miles, and then they have to rest one day, and then the next day you can again do 50 miles. So it would take 20 days at least with the best horse that you have. And they've been there, arrived overnight. So these horses were doing like 111 miles per hour at least. So that's really fast. When we were going for Sankirtan with the van, it was just 70 miles, the max that we went. And it took us a long time to arrive somewhere. So these horses are the best that you can get. Krishna's horses. So when they arrived to Kundinagram, Krishna immediately sent a brahmana to meet Rukmini, and he just sort of eased himself into the city according to the proper rituals. So when brahmana arrived, Rukmini was already very anxious. She couldn't sleep, and she was just thinking, her mind was going like, yeah, maybe Krishna can't make it, or he's not happy with some of my characteristics, so he's not gonna come. Or maybe I didn't worship the Durga properly, and even though I was visiting every day, I made some offenses during my worship, so that must be it. And like this, different things, different doubts were arising from her mind. And then she remembered, okay, I shouldn't be sinking into this because it's not time yet. There's still plenty of time for Krishna to arrive, so there's not a suitable time to lament. So let me just think about Krishna, let me meditate on Krishna. So as she was meditating, the brahmana arrived. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that she had this fake smile on her face because she didn't want to present herself as being in anxiety. But when she saw the brahmana, his gait and his bodily movements and his expression on his face, she knew immediately there's good news. So she smiled. And that smile was real. And then the brahmana told her that Krishna arrived and he reached the outer gardens and that he's here. So she was very happy about it. Now when she was going out for the temple, she had a proper bath, she brushed her teeth, they put different ornaments on her body, a girdle around her waist, jeweled girdle, and an auspicious necklace. And it's very nice how Vishnu Chakravarti also describes that Brahma advises that for auspicious ceremonies one should wear new cloth. So that's why she also wore completely new set of clothing. And as she was going out, many people were in her party, different friends and servants. They were carrying offerings for the deity. And it was musicians, and it was a whole arrangement. And on the outside of all of them, there were royal guards. So she was in the palanquin. And just as she reached the edge of the temple, the border, and then the temple, the castle, how do you call that? The, oh my god, I forgot the word. Anyway, the border between the place where she stayed and between the temple. Palace, yes. Thank you, Swar. So on this border, because one shouldn't enter the temple in the palanquin, right? So she had to walk. And it said that it's just like 12 to 15 feet. That was all that she walked, the distance. So that's like from here to the door. So that was the only chance. And she went in. And so the citizens already saw Krishna because he was present in the city. So they all went to see him. And they immediately saw, yeah, Krishna is the one. He should marry Rukmini, our princess. And it would be so good for her and all the citizens. And we would be so happy to see that happen. And there were different opinions, but some were saying, yeah, Rukmini is perfect for him. Others were saying, Krishna is perfect for Rukmini. Some were saying he should marry her. Some were saying she should marry him, like that. But they were all the same opinion, just from different perspectives. So when she was inside, offering obeisances to the deity and worshipping, all the Brahmin ladies, they were praying with Rukmini. Even though she wasn't speaking with anyone, okay, because she had this monavrata. So everything was happening like inside of her. So she was praying to the deity, please, let me marry Krishna. I don't want to be married to Shishupal, and I'm going to give up my life if this happens. And then all the Brahmin ladies that were there with her, they understood what's best for her. And they were also praying the same thing. And they even offered all their pious credits just so this would happen. So they were saying, please, please, take all the credits that we have and just make this happen. So that was a really nice thing, how devotees are like of the same mind, even if they don't communicate with each other. And so the whole worship happened, and she accepted the Mahaprasad at the end. And then on the way out, this was the last final chance, right? That's it. If Krishna's not there, we're done. So as she was walking out, it's described her perfectly shaped hips, thin waist, pink lips, green eyes, and scattered hair. And as she was walking very slowly. It says like a royal swan. So you know how swans walk, right? Or these geese that we have here outside, right? It's like... so kind of like that. And so everyone was looking at her. All the eyes were on her. And this is a nice moment here, because just like when Krishna was in Mathura, right, when he appeared in the arena, everyone saw him differently. So this is the verse that is appropriate here. Manushyanam sahasreshu kachit yadati sidaye yatatam atisidanam kashchin mam veti tatvadaha. How out of thousands of people, just few understand what who Krishna might be, but out of thousands of those, just one really knows him, who he is. So all these people saw Rukmini in a different way also. Just like the wrestlers saw Krishna as the thunderbolt, even though he was just a cowherd boy. Some saw him as that personified. So in the same way, some saw Rukmini as Maya Devi, the personified illusion. And these were the princes. So that was Shishupal, Shalva, Jarasandha. Because they were seeing Rukmini from their own enjoyment perspective. So that she's meant for their own satisfaction, not for Krishna, for Krishna's satisfaction. So they were very much bewildered. They were completely out of it when they saw her. And as she was... Now there are two different descriptions. One says that she was adjusting a ring on her hand, and then she just kind of glanced up a little bit to see if Krishna's there somewhere in the assembly. The other description says that she adjusted her hair, her locks, which were like coming in front of her eyes. And at that moment, when she glanced over the princess to see Krishna, all the princes, they were full of lust. Their hearts were bursting. And they actually fell unconscious. So they fell off the chariots, of the horses, of the elephants. They just fell down. And their weapons slid from their hands, from the grip of their hands. And as she did it, she just glanced directly at Krishna. Because she didn't want to look at any other princess assembled there. So when she saw Krishna standing there, she was really happy. And at that moment, when all the others were like falling down, Krishna just stepped forward, grabbed her, and started leaving the assembly. And all the citizens were really happy to see it. Now the princess, when they saw what's happening, they saw it as it's described, as the shackle is taking the lion's share. Now, funny thing is that Rukmini, when she wrote the letter, she said, "You are like Narsimha, a lion amongst men, and you should take what's yours," as in her, herself. "And you shouldn't sort of let the lesser beings take this reward." This is how she was saying. And now the princess saw in the opposite way, as if they are the lions and Krishna is something not worthy of Rukmini. And but then the Bhagavatam says that actually it looked like the lion is taking away his share and the shackle searchers observing it. So you know how this happens when some bigger animal is having a go at the prey. All these hyenas or shackles or whatever they are just like standing in the distance, like safe distance, trying to get some remnants or get the opportunity to snatch it. But the lion or whoever, he's just like enjoying the prey, and whenever someone is brave enough to approach, he immediately takes care of it. So in the same way, Krishna was taking away Rukmini. And in the letter she also mentioned that it's going to be, if it comes to the altercation, it's going to be like churning of the milk ocean when Lakshmi emerged as the result So he's going to churn all the princes there, all the kshatriyas, and she's going to come out of it. So when they started leaving, the princes started to get themselves together, and they started to form an opposition to try to get her back. So they started attacking them, and the rains of arrows were waves of arrows were falling towards them. And then, as Krishna was looking back, Rukmini was very afraid, very much afraid, and she was anxious. And then Krishna just said, "Don't worry, your army is going to take care of them." So immediately he referred to her as she's already in charge of whatever Krishna possesses. And Balaram was there with the whole Yadu army. So the battle commenced and they took care of them. So there were millions of warriors killed at that time. So now we're going to take a look at what actually was underlying here, how Rukmini did it. So what would you say, who caused Lord Chaitanya to appear? Okay, Advaitacharya. Any other? Haridas Thakur, okay. Sorry? Radharani, okay. Yeah, actually, these are all kind of true, but not exactly. Because Chaitanya Mangala describes that actually it was Rukmini. It seems kind of strange, right? What does Rukmini have to do with the whole thing? But there's a story how Narada Muni, again, okay, practically every story Narada Muni is at the beginning of it. He sort of makes it start spinning. So here is the same. He was thinking about Kali Yuga and he was seeing how people are fallen and how difficult self-realization is going to be. And then he thought, I cannot do anything. Only Krishna can help these people in such an abominable situation. So he decided, okay, let me visit Krishna and ask him if he's going to come and do something in Kali Yuga. And at the same time, Krishna was in Dwaraka, in his palaces, right? 16,108 palaces. And in the principal palace, there's Rukmini. And Krishna just came back. So Rukmini was bathing him and offering him fragrant garlands and sandalwood pulp. And she was crying. She was devastated. And Krishna was like, What's happening? What's wrong now? Because they just had this episode when he's trying to trick her. You know this Leela, right? So he was like, what is this? The same thing again? Something like that happening? And then she was like, no. And she was still worshipping him, serving him. And Krishna was like, please tell me. So she said, you don't know what's going on in my mind. You don't know how I feel in my heart. And he said, no, I don't know. She was saying, you know everything. You're all pervading. You know what's happening in every nook and corner of the universe, but you don't know what's happening inside of my heart. I'm serving your lotus feet, and I'm feeling this ecstasy by doing it. But at the same time, I'm devastated because I know that you're going to leave again, and then I'll be separated from you again. So even when they were together, she was already devastated. And this is the highest expression of love. So Krishna didn't understand how she feels. And then she said, yeah, this is the mood of Radha Bhav. So this is the highest feelings that one can have towards you. But you don't know how that feels like. So only if you're gonna appear in a proper form, you're gonna be able to experience it. So at that exact moment, Narada Muni came with the same kind of question or desire, and he expressed it to Krishna. And then Krishna agreed, okay, I'll have to come then in Kali Yuga as Lord Chaitanya and fulfill these two purposes. So that's Rukmini. What he did, she did, was basically she followed this Drig Drishya Viveka. So that's the philosophy of the seer and the seen. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was mentioning it oftentimes. It's basically how we shouldn't be requesting Krishna to appear before our eyes or requesting him to make arrangements for us and then find fault in him. Like many people you meet on the street, they say, where's God? Show me God. Why he doesn't appear if I want him to be here right now? So this is exactly opposite of Rukmini's mood. Instead of trying to see God, we should be trying to be seen by God, seen by Krishna. So that means we should try to make Krishna happy, Krishna's devotees satisfied. And when Krishna is satisfied with us, he's gonna appear. And we can see in our own example, the more we try to practice, the more we try to serve, to follow, the more Krishna is appearing. But if we are just like a spoiled child and we are requesting Krishna to fulfill this or that, it's not gonna happen. So this is basically like a materialistic point of view and devotional point of view. So we have to make that switch. One of the good points here in this story is also how seeing, it's not believing. So many people saw Krishna. Also these demons, demon princes, they saw Krishna, but they didn't see him for who he is. So even if Krishna would appear, we would just be like, okay, he looks good, that's okay, but whatever. So it's hearing. Hearing is what changes our perspective, what brings faith. Because she was hearing from the sages, she developed this faith. And we are the same. We're in the same position, right? We don't see Krishna. We never had any exchanges with him. And just as she was decided that she's gonna be patient and just wait for Krishna to save her, to take care of her, that's one of the instructions of nectar of instruction, right? To have this nischaya darya, to have the confidence and patience. So we are the same. And by serving the lotus feet, we get this reassurance that we're gonna be saved, that Krishna's gonna come and in the hour of need, he's gonna snatch us away. So this is Rukmini. She showed a great example of following in the footsteps of the sages. Yeah, I just want to share a little story that I had. One is when I was around 10, our mother made like a system that there would be like a roster and for different chores around the house. And then we, us three kids, we were assigned different chores. Then when you did it, it's kind of like we have in the ashram upstairs. When you did it, you had to sort of mark it that it's done. And I hated it because there was like also a reward system, okay? Like, I don't know, in a week there were so many chores, and if you did, I don't know, 90% or whatever, you got something, some pocket money or whatever. And my sister was always like very much on point. She was always doing like the most visible chores that were like when you came home, you immediately saw, okay, the table is tidied up or the, I don't know, things like that. But what I liked to do was, I don't know, remove the sofa and sweep and vacuum all the dust that's behind or do something that it's not like immediately like in your face, but it's there, like some very much needed cleaning or whatever. And then I sort of protested because my mom was saying, yeah, you do all these things, you're claiming you're doing something, but actually you don't do anything. And I was like, no, I am doing. And then she was like, yeah, but I have to see it. And then I said, I was very frustrated. I thought, who are you? Why are you like the ultimate authority on this? Because, and then she said, yeah, because I'm going to give you the reward, right? And I said, yeah, I don't need your reward. I'm just doing it. And I know that God sees what I do. And if he's happy, he's happy. And that's okay. I don't need what yours. I'm not going to be feeding in your this rigid system that you're setting up. I actually didn't know what this philosophy is, but there was some resemblance to it. And then when I became a devotee and I was already serving in the temple and living in the temple also, I was always dreaming about that one day I'll just travel with Maharaj and I'm going to be serving him and like we're really going to develop a deep connection. But it was not like anywhere near on the horizon. It was not happening. Then I thought, okay, let me just follow this. Let me follow this philosophy. Let's see if Krishna is going to do something. So I never expressed any of these desires. I never told him or anyone else. I was just praying in front of the deities regularly. And it happened. Eventually it happened. Maharaj called me and we went. And yeah, then I understood. We should always be like Rukmini. Just do our duty and pray and be humble. And we can rest assured that Krishna is going to fulfill our desires and he's going to take care of us. And if we're trying to artificially gain some position or force ourselves into some circumstances, Krishna is not happy, devotees are not happy, we cannot get the mercy in this way. And maybe temporarily it's going to look like we made it and we're cheating everyone. But time will show that what is true and we're going to just fall off like a leaf from the tree. So the best thing is that we take shelter of Rukmini Devi, and in this way we're gonna we can rest assured that we're on the right path. Thank you. Hare Krishna. So any comments, questions? Who's gonna bring them up?
We had a personal exchange at the gate. I said, where have you been? And he said, you said, I'm in the village, I'm serving a Maharaj there. And I vaguely remember somehow or other you were serving, it was Jayapada Swami, was it?
Kadambakarana Swami.
Oh, Kadambakarana Maharaj. And I thought, wow, you know, it's nice that somehow, because you were new here, weren't you? Here. And I thought, oh, somehow or other, this person is getting a chance, you know, by Krishna's arrangement. And you looked excited, and I do remember it. Yeah, but in a vague sense, it was. You know, to see you come back through the gate, that you had to go to serve somebody, and you were very new, so I don't know. I just got a taste for your excitement from you, and how things were happening for you. I don't know, because you seemed like a shy person, and yet somehow or other, it was happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Panchatattva.
Thanks, Guru. Does Krishna always make us wait to the very last minute?
As much as I understand, he's not waiting till the last minute. He just waits until we let it go. So when we are happy with it not happening, when we say, okay, whatever, like I'll accept also the darkest faith, that the darkest scenario that is possible for myself, then Krishna sees, okay, he's detached, now I can come in, now I can do something. Until then, he's gonna let you work it yourself, right? He's gonna let you suffer with your mind, like that.
Hare Krishna. So you said that you wouldn't tell anyone about what you wanted in the future, and you're saying praying to the deities. What would you do if someone asked about your future, about what you wanted to do? Would you tell them, or?
No, I would just sort of be very vague, very like, yeah, I want to serve, and I want to fulfill the desires of Srila Prabhupada, or like that.
Sure, thank you.
So yeah, deities are real and they hear us and they're amazing. Okay, Paramakru.
Just, I don't know if where you got it from, but I was just looking at the family tree, and Shishupal's mother is the sister of Vasudev.
Oh, yeah.
Krishna's father. Yeah.
Anyway, I found the different, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes there's different
okay,
things.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Anyway, that was just one point. And the other thing is that there's, in the purport and also in the verse itself, it says he stepped over the heads of the kings. Mm-hmm. Stepped on them. So I'm just kind of, is it just a language or?
Yeah.
What exactly
so,
does that mean?
Yeah, I studied Krishna book and Bhagavatam and Prabhupada's purports and Vishnu Chakravarti's purports. So as I understand it, is because it's not mentioned anywhere else than here, it's that he stepped over their heads as in front of their interest or over their, how do you say that? It's, I don't know how to say it in English. Basically, it's like stepped over their, yeah, like that. It's over their intentions, let's say. Let's put it like that. Mm. So, for instance, I don't know if you were trying to serve the Charanamrita and then Nayan would just step over you, like, yeah, like that. Kind of. I understood it in that way. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki.